It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Yesterday was Healthcare Decision Day in America. As stated in an NPR piece heard this morning on WESA, this week's tragedy at the Boston Marathon is a reminder of the fragility of life and the fact that sooner or later we must all face death. It shows the importance of having the conversation about advanced care planning and end-of-life care. I'm joined now in our studio by Nancy Zients, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. Nancy Zients, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What concerns do you have about initiating the conversation about advanced care planning and end-of-life care? What keeps you from having that conversation? And what are some ideas you're looking for in order to start it? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Nancy Zients, I would start by asking you, what is Healthcare Decision Day? And we'll have you move just a little closer to the microphone. There you go.
This was the sixth year of Healthcare Decision Day, and it was the idea of one individual named Nathan Kottkamp, who 6 years ago decided to take advantage of that old adage that there are only two things that are certain in life, death and taxes. And he said, we pay our taxes on April 15th in this country. Why don't we take the next day to start to think about our own mortality and what we may or may not want to have happen to us at end of life if we could choose a path, if we were so lucky enough to choose a path.
Okay, I'm going to channel the reaction that I'm sure you get from a lot of people. Why do I even want to talk about this stuff?
Well, most people really have some clear sense of what it is that is acceptable to them and unacceptable to them if they were to become very ill. This isn't only about dying. This is about if you're very ill and you couldn't speak for yourself. And when they see stories or hear about other people and watch a healthcare system that may or may not understand what it is that an individual would want, and things happen to them that are just like a speeding train leaving the station, and they or their family members had no say in it, they want to take a little bit more control.
So why aren't we having this conversation about end-of-life care and advanced life decisions? Why are so many people having avoidance issues with it?
It's interesting. I'm lucky enough to be in a number of countries around the world, and you hear people talk about this differently. And they do say that America seems to be the only country where we consider death to be an option. We don't consider it to be something that is inevitable, and therefore we choose not to think about it. But in fact, we leave a burden to our families who may or may not know how to act on our behalf if we can't speak for ourselves. This is only about if we can't speak for ourselves.
Does some of this have to do with the fact that, you know, so many of us are living longer, men and women?
Yes, there was a time when you didn't have to think about what you might want to do if you became chronically ill or weren't able to speak for yourself. But nowadays, people are living well into their 90s and certainly beyond that. And things happen. You may have a chronic disease. You may no longer have the ability to make a decision. You may have some concerns with physical limitations. And there are so many new technologies around that there are choices where there were no choices in the past.
So how do you decide then who is going to be the primary decision maker regarding your care?
Well, you have two options. One is you can decide, and the other is that you can have the state decide for you. So there is an advance directive law in Pennsylvania that was passed in 2006. And under that law, it says basically that if you haven't determined who's going to be your healthcare agent, there is essentially a pecking order that the state will select. Go down that list and say, okay, we'll start with your spouse and it will go to your adult children, et cetera, et cetera. But those may not be the people that you want to speak on your behalf. They may not share your values. They may not understand your goals of care. So if you want to choose someone who's going to speak on your behalf, then you should try to figure out who that person is who may share your values or would certainly respect the wishes that you put forth.
Our guest, Nancy Zients, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. We're talking about Healthcare Decision Day in America, which actually was yesterday, but in light of the news cycle, we were unable to get to it until today. So better late than never, as they say. And if you have a comment or question, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. What are some of the more common questions that you are asked?
We are asked all the time, why would I want to make a decision and put it down in writing and then I could never revoke it? Well, that's absolutely not true. Firstly, anyone who assigns a healthcare agent or who decides to do an advance directive, they can revoke that at any time. These are not permanent decisions. You have the ability to make whatever changes you would want at any time, simply by saying, ripping up a document and putting another one in its place. So the question that we have is this permanent? Can I change my mind? Can I change my mind on the person, or can I change my mind on based on the circumstance?
412-246-2002, the number to call. We'll take your calls and comments as we continue with our guest, Nancy Zients, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about Healthcare Decision Day in America and the importance of having the conversation about advanced care planning and end-of-life care. What are the concerns that you have? What are the reasons that you've been putting it off? And how do you initiate the conversation? 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with our guest, Nancy Zients, who is the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. What do you do, Nancy, if there's no living will and you're trying to figure out what to do?
The first thing is, I'll repeat it 100 times, this only happens if the individual patient cannot speak for themselves. If you can speak for yourself, whether you have a living will or not, the question should be directed to you, and if you are competent, you should be able to answer them and make any decisions at the moment. If not, the state has determined that it will start with your spouse if you have one, and then it will move to your adult children, to your parents, to adult siblings, and so on and so forth. But if you don't have a living will and you are not able to speak for yourself, it creates a tremendous amount of chaos among your family members and your healthcare professionals who really don't know what your values were, what your goals of care were, and they're going to be making some choices and some decisions that you may not have wanted to be the course of treatment that you were subjected to.
What would be an example of someone that you know of that was burned by the lack of preparedness for this situation?
So the initiative that the Jewish Healthcare Foundation started called Closure was all about stories that we were hearing from individuals who talked about end-of-life circumstances for their family members that didn't go as they would have thought. Either there was a tremendous amount of angst, decisions that they were being asked to make in the middle of the night, standing there in a hospital at what they called acute moments of terror. So without a lot of information, they said yes to a feeding tube, having no understanding of what that meant in terms of long-term and the ability to stop a particular course of action, or specifically what was involved with the patient getting a feeding tube. They would have never made that decision, they say, if they had had all the information. So you're making a quicker decision. You're not necessarily gaining all of the input from family members, and you don't necessarily know the downside risks.
So, you know, if you get started in this process early enough, what are all the bases that you want to cover? Who are all the people that you want to go to for advice so that you can weigh it all and then sift through it and make the best possible decision?
Well, it also, you have to have some basic parameters of what's important to you. So we know some people who say that within their religious beliefs, they would want to try everything. They want to be kept alive regardless of whether or not somebody else might view a treatment as futile. In their opinion, in keeping with their religious beliefs, you should try everything. They know that. You should build a care plan around that basic value. There are others who talk about the fact that they would like a certain quality of life, and if the threshold of quality of life falls below that, then they would not like to be kept alive with artificial means. So you have to know what your basic, I guess, tolerance of risk and tolerance of intervention is. So that's the first part. Does my religious value trump what I want to do? Does the interests of my children and family trump? what I want to do. I've been on this earth for 90 years. I've been on this earth for 20 years. You make different decisions. So you have to decide where your story starts and where you want your story to have its natural conclusion. We are not, this is nothing about hastening death. I just want to be really clear. This is about within what's appropriate to your values, your goals of care, and the reality of your healthcare situation, what would you want to have happen to you? What would you want to have as the intervention?
How has the Terri Schiavo case, just the lingering conversation about that, impacted all of this?
Well, it does highlight the fact that there wasn't a clear coming together of the minds between what she would have wanted, what her parents wanted, and what her spouse wanted. And that the family strife is really one of those things that we are trying to avoid by having people have full conversations. And the most important thing to do is to decide what would be important to you, to have that conversation or to appoint an agent and then have that conversation with the agent. It does no good for you to put somebody's name down on paper, never having told them that, and they get a call in the middle of the night saying, your name is listed here. What did they want? If you've never had that conversation with them, then you're not really in the best position to help them out, but yet you've been designated.
What about same-sex couples?
According to Pennsylvania law, you can appoint anyone as your healthcare agent. And so if you were to appoint someone that you would consider to be your same-sex partner as your healthcare agent, that would be recognized. If you were in a same-sex relationship and didn't appoint an agent, under Pennsylvania law, that person would not necessarily automatically be respected as your healthcare agent. So making sure that you formalize that in a written process is a protection. It's a protection for religious beliefs. It's a protection for marital status that you perceive and that the state may not.
Very quickly, in the last few seconds we have, is there a number or a website people can go to? And we can link people to that at WESA.fm.
Sure. There's a wonderful living will that has been created by both the Bar Association and the Medical Society. You can go to either of their websites or closure.org.
And again, we'll link to it on our website, WESA.fm. Nancy Zients, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.